America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, where I spent a glorious July 4th after a soggy rainfall. Luckily, I have chairs. Shout out to Dave, by the way, my boyfriend, who made me buy really nice chairs that work out really well for July 4th, if he's listening right now. They were great. We went out on these chairs, sat in the soggy mud, only we didn't sit in the mud. We sat in these nice little portable chairs and enjoyed a fantastic fireworks celebration. Had a friend from out of town, had some friends in town. It was a beautiful thing. And I am indeed, and I get a little sappy about this, so I'm sorry, but I am indeed really, really proud to be an American. I really love my country, and I don't know, July 4th and all the hundreds of thousands of my closest friends, or at least my fellow Americans, standing with me in the mall, in the soggy mud, celebrating our independence, celebrating our nation. It's just a wonderful thing. I do it every year. I go out to the mall, and folks, if you're ever in Washington, D.C., on July 4th, it is something that's not to be missed. I'll tell you a little secret, though. Come early, okay? Don't be one of those people, and you're like the 90% of you, that come an hour before the fireworks and have to get in the big crowds and have trouble, you know, getting here for Metro or whatever and can't find a place to watch the fireworks because everyone's standing. I get there 4 hours early, pack a picnic lunch, play some games, get primo position for the fireworks, and just have a wonderful time. So that's my recommendation for the 4th. I'm thinking about America and its independence at a time when another country, a much smaller country, is in its own economic, let's just say, distress. I'm talking, of course, about Greece. And I want to be a little geeky today, but I think it's really important to explain what the situation is in Greece and why it matters. Why it matters to us. Not so much because it affects our economy, because I really don't think it does. You hear that, those of you who are selling all your stocks? Because, oh no, the Greeks might exit from the Eurozone. So what? And I'm here to tell you something that may surprise you, if you follow this kind of stuff at all. I support Greece's exit from the Eurozone. I do not think the Greeks should be tied to the Euro. I support a separate Greek currency. The drachma. Now, all right, don't fall asleep yet. This is exciting stuff, all right? Okay, no, don't change that channel. Don't turn that radio dial. You're like, Mark's talking about currency? Are you kidding me? Now, let me tell you why it matters, okay? Give me 2 minutes to tell you why it matters, and then if you want to change the channel, you go right ahead. It is a free country. It matters because the Greek vote that occurred, that just occurred, where they voted no on the European bailout package, is the exact same lesson that the Republicans should have learned when we had the economic stimulus package in our own recession. Now follow the bouncing ball here. It's important. When times are bad, the role of government should never be to make them worse. That makes sense? When times are good, you need to save your money. When times are bad, you need to spend your money. I've talked about this before in the American context. Really, the concept is as old as the Bible, which says there's a time to save and a time to spend. I've talked on the air about one of my favorite lessons from the Bible. It was Pharaoh's dream that Joseph interpreted. Any Genesis fans out here? It's a great story, not the Technicolor Dreamcoat. That's all for the Broadway show. No, I'm talking about the thing that made Joseph famous, the thing that put him up at the top of the Egyptian hierarchy, that brilliant economic concept where this lowly slave in jail in Egypt interpreted the Pharaoh's dream and became his great financial advisor. What was Pharaoh's dream? Does anyone remember? Pharaoh dreamed of 7 fat cows. And he dreamed that 7 skinny, emaciated, ugly-looking cows ate the 7 fat cows. And then he woke up. And he asked all his advisors, everyone he knew, what could this dream possibly mean? Seven fat, beautiful cows eaten by seven skinny, emaciated cows. What could this mean? No one could figure it out. He turned to Joseph, this Hebrew slave in prison. Joseph knew exactly what the dream meant. It meant there was going to be 7 years in Egypt of great harvests, of bountiful grain, plenty of livestock. It was lots of rain and flood, the Nile flood, whatever it was. It was great agricultural times. That was very important 4,000 years ago. Followed by 7 years of drought, 7 years of pain, 7 years of bad crops, 7 years of bad weather, 7 years of a very weak harvest. So Joseph did what anyone would do who could predict the future. He said to the king, the Pharaoh, for 7 years, you need to save all the grain. People make grain. Don't let them eat it all. Save it. They got bountiful. They got tons and tons and tons of food. Don't let it waste. Store it. Save it. Keep it. The drought is coming. Pharaoh believed him. He did exactly that. And after the 7 years of bountiful harvest, came 7 years of drought, of pain. But the Pharaoh, with dirty Joseph by his side, knew that he had saved enough grain for the Egyptian people. Now, whether this story is historically true or not doesn't matter. Somehow, frankly, I doubt it. But, hey, parables have meanings. Stories have meaning. The idea is a good one. And if you know the end of the Joseph story, you know that when his brothers, who were still in Israel, remember, they exiled him to Egypt. They sold him to slavery to Egypt. But his brothers, who were still in Israel, Israel was starving because they hadn't, the wise Joseph, they hadn't saved their grain. They ate all they could when they could. They were starving. His brothers come down to Egypt because that's the only place with food, reunites with Joseph, and they all lived happily ever after. Here's the point of the story. What does this have to do with Greece? The story is that, particularly when you're talking about a large economy, yes, it's easy to say, although people don't do it, save in good times. Save in good times. Don't eat it all. Store some for a rainy day. Your parents always tell you that, right? Don't use it all up. But also, people will tell you in bad times, times are bad. Times are tight. Tighten your belt. Don't hire someone. Don't spend that money. Don't eat that fancy food. You need to be careful. That's what they told Americans during the Great Depression. And we suffered a very long time. Just as it's wrong to spend every last thing you can when you're fat and happy and rich, it's also wrong to deprive yourself, and particularly deprive your economy, because sometimes we make the mistake of looking at an individual and making the comparison to a nation's economy. They're different things. The worst thing an economy can do when it falls into recession is to stop spending, is to save money. The Great Depression of the 1930s began as a great recession. The stock market collapsed, we all know, Black October, 1929. But it was only a recession then. Unemployment was not that high. But people got scared, people got nervous, people saved everything they could, nobody spent anything, nobody borrowed anything. Herbert Hoover, President Herbert Hoover, not understanding the basics of economics as we understand it today, said, you know what, the economy's collapsing, I'm not going to spend any money, I'm going to save. I'm going to raise taxes and I'm going to cut spending. Our deficit's going through the roof. We're going to take more money out of people's hands just at the time when they're starving to protect the government coffers. And Herbert Hoover turned the Great Recession into the Great Depression. He also led to the founding of the modern Democratic Party because Democrats between Abraham Lincoln and Franklin Roosevelt, there were only two Democratic presidents. Now, that's a period of 70 years. two Democratic presidents. One was Grover Cleveland, who won by the skin of his teeth, by the way, barely winning. And the other was Woodrow Wilson, who only won because the Republican Party split its vote between a true progressive, Teddy Roosevelt, and the guy that he chose to succeed him, Howard Taft. Other than that, there were no Democratic presidents in 70 years. But Herbert Hoover changed all that. Herbert Hoover ran the American economy into the ground, and there was great, great depression. And had there been, and there wasn't in those days, had there been some kind of international monetary fund, some kind of international organization that controlled the nation's money supply that looked out over the United States, had they said, you know what, times are bad in America, we don't trust you to pay back your debts, we're not lending you any more money, we want you to practice austerity, we want you to drive down your government deficits and increase taxes on the American people, and, well, that's what Herbert Hoover did. He would have done every single thing that group told him to do, and bingo, down in the dumps. Great recession. Now, this is not a Democrat that says, hey, spend all the time. That's not me. I know that's a caricature of Democrats. No, there are times to save. When the economy is good, late 60s, Lyndon Johnson. When the economy is good, late 90s, Bill Clinton. When the economy is good, when unemployment is low, when inflation is low, that's what you got to save. That's when you got to remember the seven fat cows in Pharaoh's dream, sometimes called Joseph's dream. That's when you got to save. Bill Clinton saved. He gave us the greatest surplus in American history and put our nation on a solid economic footing until George Bush destroyed it. Lyndon Johnson made the wrong decision. Lyndon Johnson spent money in good times on a nasty war called Vietnam. He didn't want to put it on the nation's books. He didn't want to raise taxes for it. It was kind of unpopular at the time. So he spent money at a time when unemployment was low, and that just led to massive inflation and led us to the most horrible decade in recent American history economically, and that was the 1970s. Here's the point. Here's how it all wraps up with Greece. Greece is part of a much larger European group called the European Union. Greece is a very small player in the European Union. It is small in terms of population. It is small in terms of its economy. And its economy is far weaker than the Titan, really, which is Germany. Germany is the strongest economy by far in Europe. But France, Italy, England, these all have strong economies. UK, I should say. Greece is a bit player. And one of the great ways that smaller nations help their economies, which aren't as productive as a strong, populous, well-educated, well-productive nation, is they use their currency to stimulate their economy. If you weaken your currency, that makes your product stronger in terms of exports. But Greece has been tied to Germany to be part of this Eurozone, to get the Euro. And the Euro is killing Greece. So what exactly happened in the referendum? What was it the Greek people were voting for, or more specifically against? I'll explain when we come back. If you have any questions, comments, disagreements, give me a call. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Talking about the situation in Greece, I gave you a little bit of background. Let's go specifically into what's going on in Greece. And like I said, if you agree or disagree, feel free to call in 888-488-MARK. So what makes the United States of Europe different from the United States of America? Because despite all our regional differences, despite the Civil War fought between North and South, the so-called war between the states, according to the southern side. We, for all that we snipe at each other, are a pretty damn united country. We understand that rich states have to subsidize poor states. I wish Republicans would understand that New York has been subsidizing Mississippi for more than a century now. Probably a century and a half. Maybe longer. That's what we do in America. If people are poor in one part, I live in Virginia. Northern Virginia has a lot more wealth than Southwest Virginia. And Northern Virginia subsidizes the rest of the state. I understand that. I wish we'd get some thank yous from now and then, but I do understand that. We're all one state. We're all one nation. Germany doesn't want to subsidize Greece. And I get it. They are separate, independent nations. Far more different, even than New York and Mississippi. They speak a different language. They have a different culture. And they were at war with each other, 70 years ago, rather than 150 years ago. Twice that long. But Germany does have a point. I mean, Greek spending has been profligate. It's been out the window. The Greeks almost never pay their taxes. Their economy is in disarray. Their country's a mess. It's true, their country's a mess. So why would I believe that countries should be able to get more money even if they're a mess? Don't you want to cut off your wayward child? Don't you want to stop? Sure, if somebody's spending out the wazoo, you want to stop that. I get that. I understand that. I really do. But there's no way for a country, other than an individual, to get its way out of recession other than by spending. And the reason has something to do with some basic economics, something to do with monetary policy, and it sounds all highfalutin, but it's not that hard. It's all about the fact that when you save a dollar, that's a dollar saved. When you spend a dollar, though, it multiplies. Yeah, I spend a dollar on a restaurant, 10% is saved, 90% goes out to the waiters and the food distributors, then they go out and they spend their money and they maybe save 10%, and then 80% is left, and it's plus 70%, 60%. Soon, you've got 7 or 8 times your dollar spent. As much as we mocked it, there's a reason why George W. Bush said after September 11th, go out and spend money. People thought that was pretty crass, given that 3,000 Americans had just been murdered. But economically, he had a point. You can spend your way out of recession. That was our mistake in the Great Depression. And Greece's only way to spend its way out is with a new currency, the drachma. Otherwise, its money is controlled by Germany, and it can't last. This is Mark Levine. Be right back after this.
Who says nerds can't be fun? It's Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Going to get to your calls in just a few moments. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Talking about the Greek situation. Because I think it's a paradigm for really understanding all economic situations. And this is not to defend profligate spending. It's not to defend some of the things that's going wrong with the Greek economy. But if you've got somebody who's in danger, who's suffering, who's starving, who's poor, Republicans do the same thing. Hitting them harder, making them poorer, just doesn't help the situation. Someone has to be able to learn how to get out of poverty. And nowhere is that more true than in a nation's economy. The economy, if you cut growth for a nation, how's it ever going to pay back its debts? Luckily, there's one thing you can do with a nation you can't do with an individual. You can devalue their currency. That's actually what the Fed did when we were in our Great Recession. One of the reasons why we came out of our biggest recession since the Great Depression, the Bush Depression, which was the second worst we've ever had since the Great Depression in the last 100 years. is because the Federal Reserve did everything to increase the money supply. They did something called quantitative easing. They lowered interest rates to close to zero. They did all these things in order to pump money into the economy, which caused us to get out of there, to get out of the depression. But we in America control our money supply through the Federal Reserve, which is particularly well-run right now, by the way, both by Janet Yellen and by Bernanke. I'm a big fan of both of them. Not a big fan of Alan Greenspan, the Bush guy who messed it all up. We can increase our own money supply. That's fantastic. Greece doesn't have that power. Greece wanted to be part of a 19-nation euro with a very different economy from the strong economies Germany and France. They don't control their own currency. The best way for an economy to get out of this situation is to devalue its currency, make its exports cheaper. But Greece can't do that. It doesn't control its currency. It doesn't control the central bank. For all the Americans who want to destroy the American Federal Reserve, thank God we have it. Thank God we have it. We can control our own money supply. We don't end up like Greece. Greece can't control its own money supply. It has to look to Germany, and Germany and Greece are going to keep fighting until, I hope, Greece leaves the euro, which I think is a mistake to begin with, takes out its drachma, and finds its way toward healing. Do want to hear what you have to say, though, and I have a bunch of callers on the line. Please hang on. I will get to each and every one of you as long as you don't hang up. Let's go to Red in New Mexico on line 5. Hey, Red, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Well, I kind of disagree with a lot of what you say.
Okay, go for it.
If you're going to use a Bible story, please use the one about Jesus kicking the Pharisees out of the temple, because that's what's really going on. And if you really want America to have a great money supply, you do need to get rid of the Federal Reserve, because in 1913, we lost the power of Congress to coin money, which is in the Constitution. So
You want to get rid of the Federal Reserve.
It's a fiat debt cycle.
But you want to get rid of the Federal Reserve. So you want to be on
like I said, Jesus tried to kick the Pharisees out of the temple, and I think that's what everybody should be trying to do now.
Well, let's bring this up to Greece.
You could have any loan you want at like 0.0001%.
That's right.
You could have a government that's 10 times the size of what we have now, but you could run it efficiently because there wouldn't be any of the corruption of the Federal Reserve.
Corruption?
And boom,
Red.
Your whole premise.
Now, wait a minute. Red, hold on. Before we had a Federal Reserve, we had national panics every 4 or 6 years. Sometimes we had no money because of the gold standard. We had farmers uprising. We had William Jennings Bryan saying, "Crucify me on a cross of gold," because the gold standard was disrupting their business. And it got so bad and it led to such inequality of wealth that the government ran out of money. We didn't have a Federal Reserve, and they had to depend on J. Pierpont Morgan and Andrew Carnegie
and all
the robber barons. They put them more in control because they were the only ones with money, and they had to bail everybody out. Since the Federal Reserve, now we have our elected representatives, whether it be the president or the Congress, control the monetary supply. They overlook what the Federal Reserve does. It's still independent, which I support. That gives it a lot of freedom from politics, but we do control the appointments. And in doing so, we had, I think any economist would agree, the best recovery from the Bush recession, the worldwide 2008 depression/recession of any nation on earth within the United States of America. Thank you, Ben Bernanke. Thank you, Federal Reserve. Make your point.
And we're still not out of it. What you really need to do, if you really want to understand the banking system, is read Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. And that's how the 13 families, the robber barons, put the whole world into a debt cycle.
They sure did. There's but you know what? They did that before there was a Federal Reserve. Now that we have the Federal Reserve, that's not going to happen anymore. That's exactly why we have a Federal Reserve.
It's the robber baron banking system, dear.
Wait a minute.
Jesus kicked out of the temple.
You're spouting red. Look here, you.
I'm spouting truth, and you can't handle it. No, read.
No. You're just spouting nonsense. Look, red. You can tell me all your books and stuff. Explain to me this. Do you believe that a nation in economic trouble, that we should raise taxes and cut spending the way Herbert Hoover did? Is that what you think should happen?
Well, I think you should take all the billionaires for all the money that they've stole, and you know, even the Vatican and all the gold that they stole from all the indigenous folks all over the world. I mean,
yeah, but I'm
like,
talking about economic.
You know, it's
bus
all
cycles.
Money out of thin air, and it's all a control system. And until the people of the world are waking up, and we're going to shut it down. You know, we don't need them to control. I'd like to see the Congress have the power to coin the money again.
Congress does have the power to coin money. Sure they do. You have currency in your pocket. It just happens to be a very small percentage of the monetary supply.
And it's not backed by anything. There is no gold in Fort Knox.
Thank God it is not backed by anything. Because you know what? If our monetary supply...
All the civilizations of the fiat system are failing.
Really?
Because it's...
Because I think... I think that America's doing better than Greece. Greece has that system. Greece has a system where it cannot control its monetary supply. That's what you want. You want us to be
right,
just
the,
like
I
Greece.
Know. The IMF controls it.
No, Germany controls
saying,
it. No. The European
the
Central
IMF.
Bank
they're
controls it.
No to the fiat system.
Look, when you don't increase the money supply, okay, that means if you're on the gold standard, that the money supply cannot increase. People cannot get loans. If you can't get loans, you can't have a business. Interest rates skyrocket. Okay.
And if you nationalize all the banks like Iceland did, and take it out of the hands of the fiat system of the Federal Reserve and their banking system.
What do you think the Federal Reserve is? The Federal Reserve is a national money supply.
And we'd have abundance and prosperity all over the world because people would be going, well, I've always wanted to do this, so I'm going to use my creativity for that.
Well, Red, I mean, you know, that's certainly what the Soviet Union did. I mean, they nationalized all their banks. So that didn't
yeah, and they're
out.
Going to the BRICS system, which is putting pressure on, you know, the IMF. The IMF is destroying the world, like I said.
Red, I agree with the Greeks fighting back against the IMF. I do. I don't think you're following me here.
By John Perkins.
I don't think you're following me here. But it sounds like this guy John Perkins is a nutcase, I got to say, because it just doesn't make any sense to me.
He worked for the IMF, and then he whistleblew and he told the truth.
I am telling you that I agree with the Greeks fighting against austerity, okay? But you don't seem to understand what I'm saying. The reason why the Greeks are right to fight against austerity is because they should control their own money supply, not have it fixed by someone else. Right. But America's Federal Reserve controls its money supply rather than having it being fixed based on how much of a shiny metal's in the ground. The point is you should be able to allow policymakers to control it rather than letting some shiny metal's existence control it. If you take away people's power to make the economy better, the economy gets worse. That's my point.
Right, and if you could return the power of Congress to coin the money away from the Federal Reserve, like I said, they could make loans at point.
But you don't understand, Red, Congress does coin money and Congress does control the Federal Reserve. Congress has oversight over the Federal Reserve. It's an independent branch, but Congress could abolish it.
Only three corporations own all the media, all the magazines, you know, all the...
Well,
you know,
no, it's a lot... that's a different issue, but it is a lot more than three. But I don't like media consolidation either. Anyway, Red, thank you for this call. It's been an interesting one. I appreciate it. Let me go to Nathan in Santa Rosa on line one. He may disagree with me, too, for a different reason. Let's find out. Go ahead, Nathan.
Hey, Mark. It's Nathan from Santa Rosa.
Hey, Nathan.
Hey, how's it going? I just want to say I totally agree with everything you're saying.
Oh, good.
With regard to this issue with
good, because Red hates me now.
Totally.
Good. Well, I just don't think she's right. I mean, I she seems like a nice person. I just don't think she's right on this. But go ahead.
Yeah, she seemed to be like cycling through some
conspiracy theories.
Of conspiracy theories.
Exactly.
Stuff,
that's what I heard.
All of that.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, as far as like the whole Greece situation, you're right. They don't control their currency. It's a
right.
controlled currency by the central EU, the central bank, and
the European bank.
They are just like you said, they're unable to make the changes in their monetary policy to. I forgot what that's called, but
to devalue their currency. So here's the difference between here's the difference between Germany and Greece and New York and Mississippi. Okay, Germany is a very rich, productive country, makes a lot of money, has a strong economy. Greece is having real economic trouble. In the United States of America, New York It's a very productive, rich economy. It's very expensive. If you ever tried to live in Manhattan, Mississippi, sorry, Mississippi, but it is. It's a very poor area. Its economy is much weaker. And here's the difference, all right? New York subsidizes Mississippi every single year. And most people in New York and Mississippi don't even realize it. Because even if they were to realize it, we would say, you know what, we're all one nation, we're all going to get together. New York pays a lot more in taxes than it gets back. Mississippi gets a lot more in taxes than it pays. And if there's any resentment, honestly, it's from Mississippi towards New York. I don't know why they're getting this wonderful bailout. But we're all one nation, and so we understand that if Mississippi's in trouble, that the federal government's going to help Mississippi. We get it. We're one nation. Because Europe is not one nation. I know they call it the European Union. It's not a union like the United States of America, because Greece and Germany resent each other, because Germany does not want to bail out Greece the way New York bails out Mississippi every day, because they did fight a war 70 years ago rather than twice that long ago, 140 years ago, as was between New York and Mississippi. They are different nations. They're not one united nation. And because they're not united, there is the common central bank doesn't work for them. And so I think Greece and Germany need an amicable divorce. And Greece will do just fine. It won't do as well as Germany, but it will do just fine. It gets its own currency. It's called the drachma. It existed for a long time. They'll devalue the currency, and basically they'll get their exports cheaper, and they'll muddle their way through. There's a reason why we don't share a currency with Mexico. It would be a bad idea if we did that. Because we're not in a common nation with Mexico, and we'd be constantly asked to bail out Mexico, and there'd be a lot of resentment between both the United States and Mexico if we shared a common currency, and it would go both ways. That's what's going on between Germany and Greece. And what's interesting is it's not just economic, it's cultural. If Germany and Greece really were one united Europe, there'd be a little grousing, but it'd be no difference from New York and Mississippi. But because Greece and Germany are more like United States and Mexico than they are like New York and Mississippi, that's the heart of the reason for the problem. They need a divorce. Make sense?
I think you're totally right. That's a cool analogy with the New York and Mississippi too. I was thinking that. But like, yeah, as far as like the cultural stuff too, is like as far as like Greece and Germany, like maybe Greece doesn't want to have like working to save so much money and like plow that back into more corporations for all this industrial growth. Maybe they just want to have a little bit of slower, more relaxed lifestyle.
That's right. Maybe they don't want to work 60-hour weeks like they do in Germany. That's not fair to Germans, frankly. Maybe they don't want that kind of system. They want a different system. Maybe they want. At the end of the day, it's as much as New Yorkers and Mississippians complain about each other, we're a lot closer to each other than either of us are to Mexicans. And honestly, Germany and Greece are much more like different countries because you know what? They are. The European Union, I thought, was a fallacy when they joined together. It made sense for Benelux. It made sense for Belgium, Netherlands, and Luxembourg. Those are very similar countries. I think they would care if one of them, you know, had trouble. France and Germany, okay, more so than Germany and Greece. But the further it expanded, I was glad that England stayed out of the Eurozone. I thought that was the right move for the UK. I don't like giving up that kind of sovereignty. If I were in Greece, I would not want to give up my sovereignty to this European central bank. If I'd been in the UK, I would have supported joining the euro. It's interesting because I am a liberal, but I do fiercely believe in independence. And so I may disagree with some of my liberals on this. Thank you for your call, Nathan. Thanks for agreeing with me, particularly after Red didn't. And my next caller, Wayne from New Mexico, is going to make up the difference. But Wayne, wait till after the break. You'll be the deciding vote here. To see whether you agree with Red or Nathan, or they have some other view of your own. If you want to join in the conversation, just pick up the phone, dial 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am Mark Levine, your host, talking about the Greek situation, and had a wonderful spirited conversation with a number of my callers. Red strongly disagrees with me. Nathan strongly agrees with me. And Wayne from New Mexico on line two. What's your vote?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for letting me weigh in on this.
Sure.
I appreciate it. I just wanted to kind of lace my comments with a little bit of biblical language, since that kind of is how the conversation started today.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that in a divorce, you know, a divorce is a lot like gluing two pieces of wood together, and then when you pull the wood apart, it kind of rips and destroys both pieces of wood, right?
Yeah.
So the way I see it is this. You basically said that they are going to divorce, but you thought it would be nice if they could divorce amicably. I just don't really see that.
Well, no, there's going to be there's going to be some hardship. I don't mean to say this is easy. I want to be very clear. I'm not saying this is easy. This is going to be very hard, and it's going to be hardest on Greece. But I think that the situation that Greece is, I think a divorce is a great example, because I think that the divorce will be painful, but the marriage was more painful. And at the end of the day, Greece needs to start anew. And I think as painful as divorce will be, it will be better than continuing its marriage. So I think that's a great analogy.
Yeah, that's essentially the way I wanted to say it too. But I just wanted to check on one more thing, and that's that it's going to be harder, of course, on Greece. And I feel terrible for Greece. And I did want to say that any shame that's going to be on Greece, if the people of Greece have the worst depression that they've known in this generation.
That's
They're
right.
Essentially walking around in sackcloth and ashes. I did want to say that the shame is going to certainly not be on the Greek people. It's going to be on the other people.
Yeah, well, I mean, and listen, I'm not blaming Germany entirely. Greeks had a number of bad governments as well. My whole point is basically just sort of an economic point, and that is that austerity, this idea that you punish the debtor, doesn't really help. I mean, Mexico actually, I used Mexico as an example before, is a clear example. You may remember that I think it was Bill Clinton bailed out Mexico when Mexico was really suffering from a similar situation to Greece, put a lot of money in Mexico, helped the Mexican economy grow, and Mexico paid back its debt in full with interest and early. Germany has to do the same for Greece and give a bunch of money, but at the same time, give them a way to grow their way out, make sure Greeks pay their taxes. I'm not saying just give it for free. There's got to be conditions. But at the same time, don't use the conditions to try to strangle the Greek economy. You'll never get your money back that way. You'll never get your money back by strangling the person you want to pay back your money.
I do think that if the Greek people are sitting back and hoping for a different fair deal from the people in charge, certainly the Germans are a large part of those people, you know, it's probably going to be wasted hope. And that's,
it's going to be rough. When the Greek prime minister said that the no will mean he's going to get a better deal, you know, I think it's a bit wishful. I think the real answer is a divorce. Thank you for your call, Wayne. I do want to get to my last caller, Carson in California on line five. Carson, we only got a minute left, so make your point. Oh, Kaysen, sorry. Kaysen, make your point quick.
Hi, I just wanted to call and disagree about what you said of the federal Fed.
Okay,
could be
real quick.
Is controlled by Congress. And it is absolutely not controlled. It can be dissolved by Congress.
Right.
But the head of the Fed is appointed by
the president. That's right. But Congress oversees the Fed
and
sets its policy.
Let me make my point.
Is
a private reserve federal corporation. They don't, you know, it has nothing to do with the government. The president can.
It has everything to do with the government. It's controlled by the government.
He can't tell them what to do.
Well, it's an independent branch of government. And that's good.
No,
and I like that it's independent.
It's a private corporation owned by banks.
No, it's ownership.
True.
No, the banks don't. What could the people that control the Federal Reserve is the Board of Governors that are appointed by the president. There's terms, 14 years and so forth. The government does control the Federal Reserve. It has independence, and I think that's a good thing. It has independence from a lot of political attacks. Thank you, everyone, for your calls. I'll be back tomorrow. Just tune in to the same channel, same time, same place. This is Mark Levine. We can talk about this or anything else you care about. Follow me on Twitter @MarkLevineTalk. Talk to you tomorrow.